Before we start the pod, a quick mention for a band Roger and I both love. The Arctic Monkeys, Sheffield natives and sizable Sheffield Wednesday fans. While the Owls currently sit 13th in the championship, we can all take solace in the success of their brilliant new album, AM, which Rolling Stone called a game changer. The album is on sale for $5.99 on iTunes right now. You can also purchase it at the Domino Records web store. That is dominorecordco.com/AM.
$5.99.
This is Rebecca Lowe, or Rebecca Lua, if you listen to Suboptimal Radio, and you are listening to Men in Blazers on the NBC Sports Network.
It's unbelievable!
From the Embassy Row Studios, in the crap part of Soho, it's the Men in Blazers podcast, Rog.
Oh, take you, Faye.
Oh, another big show last night. Was that our sixth, Rog?
Biggest in crap. It was our six, and this one barely one made the top six.
It barely made the top six.
Yeah, the end, my favourite part of any of our shows.
Yeah, Shaggy.
Happened with a minute to go
in
the show, and you could actually hear our wonderful producer, Jen Simon.
Who
I like to call Jen Simone.
Jen Simons,
Yeah. You could hear her in one of our headphones saying, 1 minute.
You could.
Yeah. It's amazing. We're plummeting in quality. Just when you think we've reached the lowest, the seabed, we find another seabed to go. I think part of it
is... Was there actually 1 minute to go when she said that? Because what would make that a more suboptimal moment if actually there was only 30 seconds to go at the point that she said 1 minute?
Well, our problem is, to be candid, listeners, we've spent all of our budget. We've blown it on the special effects we used in the first five.
Yeah, all the special effects. What were the special effects we used, Rod?
The toupee that you had made for you and then never wore on the show.
Yeah.
It's expensive.
Big night of sport for me after the show last night, Rod.
Yeah.
I went to see Monday Night Football. Went to see the real Monday Night Football. Went and saw the Giants.
You went to see my mate Andrew Luck?
Oh, my word.
GFOP.
Well, first of all, I have to say, start there with Andrew Luck. He is amazing. It was a pretty crap game of football. Rog, just shows that all forms of football have their moments of crap. What a player he is to see in the flesh. Do you know what he does, Rog? He throws the ball into space and people arrive and catch it. Boom patterns.
Yep.
Again and again and again. An amazing, amazing football player. But the thing I spent most of the time thinking about, Rog, was why they don't hold every World Cup in America. The atmosphere, even at a crap football game in Giant Stadium, was so spectacular at the MetLife. You just imagine a big US men's national team, and now the modern era, the post-Brazil US men's national team World Cup era. We need a World Cup. And the one thing I think that soccer needs to learn from the NFL, Rog, is the playing of music at all points through the game to heighten the action. Every throw-in, I think we need a music cue there. Every corner kick, we need a music cue. Goal kicks, rally towels, music cues. More music in the Premier League. That's just all I'm saying.
It's a terrible idea.
I love it. It will really work.
It's the thing that upsets me most about American sports. When I go to Yankee Stadium, the great Yankee Stadium, they tell you when to clap, when to cheer, when to make some noise. And I think one of the things I love most about soccer, football, English football in particular, German football all the more, as we'll discuss, is the fans know the ritual, the rhythm, and in the places with truly great atmosphere, which we'll also talk about. And you don't get that. I can explain to you quite succinctly four reasons why the World Cup has not come to America, or they don't hold everyone here. And that's due to corruption, graft, backhanders, and avarice.
Yeah.
Those are
those are four big reasons.
Pretty much.
It's amazing. See, I feel that way about music at the NBA in internal arenas. But on a cold night at MetLife, that music just does so much. And you can't say that the Giants fans of the New York Giants don't know their game, don't know their team, don't know when to clap,
Grand Prix.
I went to the Grand Prix, went to the F1. I'm going to the Knicks tonight. Seeing a lot of American sport right now. The Grand Prix, the F1 was amazing down in Austin. That amazing raceway. Lewis Hamilton won the race. It's not because it's on NBC. But I really do feel that the success of Formula One on a global basis and in America now finally, and soccer are kind of linked. They're both creatures of the global television age, Rog. Both creatures of the digital age.
Yep, cars don't do it for me, David.
Really? Not even those cars. Those aren't even cars. They're like fighter jets with wheels.
Oh, they're like Matic on wheels. I didn't learn to drive till I was 30.
Really?
Yeah. I used to hitchhike all over Europe.
Did you never drive a car when you were a teenager?
Never.
You never had any interest in driving a car?
I used to hitchhike everywhere. All over Europe. Never learned to drive. And the only reason I did start to drive, because my wife told me that she wouldn't have a baby unless I could theoretically drive her to the hospital in emergency. Never been a car person. I love walking around this city.
Did you hitchhike around Liverpool? How did you, like, get to your tennis club? How did you, like, get around? You didn't hitchhike everywhere in Liverpool.
Yeah, everywhere.
You did?
Everywhere. Always there.
Well, your parents didn't have to just give you a lift everywhere.
I had a very tight pair of Daisy Dukes. I get a car, no problem. I've got to say, even as a non-car lover,
yeah,
I'm in mourning today,
yeah,
for Tom Magliozzi, the elder Car Talk brother.
Oh, I love Car Talk.
Passed away yesterday. Say, I moved to Chicago originally in part because of my love for Studs Terkel, who I got to meet when I was hanging out at Chicago Public Radio. But while I was there, like so many people, I fell in love with Click and Clack. What was it? It was their passion. It seemed unvanquishable, their love for each other. And the thing I loved today reading the obits was about the story of how he became a conventional career man, an engineer, I think, but then was in a close call on the highway when a truck cut him off and he almost died. And he went right to his boss. He just drove right to his job, went right to his boss, resigned on the spot. And he said that if he hadn't resigned then, the thing that he thought about as his life flashed by was that if he didn't change his life, he'd just live a life, quote, of quiet desperation, which I think is a code to live by.
God, you're bringing me down at the beginning of the pod.
Well, let me lift you up with two words.
Okay, let's go.
Nick Willender.
Oh, well, is that going to lift me up? You didn't enjoy that either.
No, I didn't.
Yeah.
I don't understand that he's got two kids.
So why is that uplifting, Rog?
Well, I'll tell you why it was. I must say, all I say is it must take a special inner drive and motivation for a bloke who's got two kids to want to do that. But what I found amazing, Dave, is the way he calmly commentated as he walked across the wire. It was like watching Phil Collins in concert, both drumming and singing, but it was actually impressive. And it brought my mind back to football. And I'm talking to you, Tim Howard.
Mm-hmm.
I know you listen to this show. I've got a dream where you both goalkeep and commentate at the same time, like Nick Willender. And if he can do it when he's suspended 500 feet over Chicago, you could keep a clean sheet against Sunderland and chat with Arlo White at the same time.
So I love that. You're for that, but you're against music at corner kicks. I love it. I love it.
Remembrance Sunday, David.
Oh, Rod. Remembrance Sunday coming up this weekend, remembering all of the fallen troops in the British and Commonwealth Armed Forces who lost their lives.
A lot of you wondering why the players are wearing poppies on their jerseys, and that is why.
That is why, yeah.
100 years this Remembrance Sunday since World War One began.
Yeah.
So I'll just say, and we're going to talk about what we're doing for Veterans Day.
Yeah.
In the words of Lawrence Binyon from the poem For the Fallen, they shall grow not old as we that are left grow old. Age shall not weary them, nor the years condemn.
Yeah,
as the going down of the sun and in the morning, we'll remember them.
Our Veterans Day auction, Rog, is in process in honour of Veterans Day in the US. That's November 11th. We're auctioning off the chance to attend a taping of our suboptimal television show in the crap part of Soho. The auction is up on eBay now. You can find a direct link on our website, meninblazers.com. It's also on our Facebook page. And all proceeds go to the Wounded Warrior Project, Rog.
We cannot wait to have the winners come and raise a glass with us.
We do. I mean, much as we want to raise as much money as possible for the Wounded Warrior Project, we also do want to control expectations. It's going to be wonderful to have you. It's not as though we've got stadium VIP luxury seating in the Men in Blazers studio. There isn't quite enough room, Rog.
We can just shove them in the back of the panic room.
Yeah, we could. They could sit there in the back the whole time behind Shaggy. We've got a packed show today. We're going to break down all the yellow cards and non-penalty decisions that was the Manchester Derby. We're going to look at the unbearable heaviness of Jose Mourinho's being. Liverpool's ongoing march of folly. We're going to dip our toe into the Bundesliga Klassiker. We're going to cuddle your Ravens and welcome Mr. Arlo White.
Oh, can't wait for that.
To the pod, including, Rog, during that phone call, I will be revealing the name of the GDOP.
Oh, I can't wait, Dave.
To the football.
Oh, this is breakfast.
Cheers, Rog.
To Tweed.
To Tweed. Enjoyed a lovely Guinness at the New York Giants game last night.
I saw the photo on Instagram.
They have a draft Guinness. It's very, very good there. Okay, Rog, we are 10/38 of the way through the Premier League season, reduces to 5/19. One team remains undefeated, my beloved Chelsea Football Club. 19 others seem like they are suffering from various degrees of runner's nipple, Rog. The narratives
chafing
are beginning to flip-flop around the likes of Brendan Rodgers and Spurs' Mauricio Pochettino. First of all, to the Manchester Derby. Manchester City 1, Manchester United 0. The 168th Manchester Derby was won by City thanks to a 63rd-minute Sergio Aguero strike after United had been reduced to 10 men once Chris Smalling received his second yellow card for idiocy, Rog. 13 points from 10 games is Manchester United's worst start to a campaign since 1986-1987, Rog.
Oh, I remember those years. It was when I was last happy.
Oh, Rog.
Combined cost of the two squads, yep. $1.1 billion.
Yeah.
Yet somehow they both arrived as limping, wounded animals. Uh-huh. Head of the game, Pellegrini had suggested City lacked trust. I don't know how you work that one out on the training ground. He had admitted we are not the team we used to be. Di Michelis stepped in to replace Mangala, one of a glut of Argentinians on the field for both teams. I think there were five RGs, David. At Pippen, Intizi said, at Men in Blazers, Argentinian emigration to Manchester is similar to German exodus to Argentina about 70 years ago. It's what England would have looked like if we hadn't won the Falklands War, David.
Yep.
It's a funny game. Both sides' brittle confidence seemed to give the game a real edge. They were both trying to impose themselves while taking in turns to concede possession simply at the outset.
I must say, the game was, for much of the game, devoid of quality, but chock full of passion and commitment from both teams. I found this a quite entertaining and sort of an absorbing game of football to go and watch. But a bizarre performance from 29-year-old referee Michael Oliver, Rog.
Bizarre in what way? Because he booked somebody who chose to place their undercarriage in the line of fire as Joe Hart kicked the ball at incredible pace towards his crotch.
Yeah, well, that's
thinking of
to be,
you, Chris.
That was actually a fair booking, but it was the fouls he didn't call that I found more remarkable. Seemed to allow Fellaini sort of at will to foul Aguero, even in the box, Rog. Certainly two instances when I think he could have called a penalty. Nothing wrong with the two yellow cards for Chris Smalling, but I think he had a somewhat inconsistent game, Rog.
The second yellow, Louis van Gaal called it stupid. He said, as a player, you have to control your aggression. It's an amazing post-Sir Alex statistic. No Premier League team has had more players sent off in 2014 than United. 5. Mm-hmm. That would never, ever have happened in Sir Alex's day. I felt a bit sad, Dave, not just for Manchester United, who had to bring Paddy McNair on alongside Luke Shaw, who looks like a college freshman who's just discovered weed, and Valencia and Carrick. It reminded me in the Second World War towards the end when the desperate Germans threw in kids and the elderly onto the front lines. It's how thin United are at the back, a winger, a midfielder and two kids to try and shore things up. But also sad, Davo, that Chris Smalling and Phil Jones, they were meant to be England's future.
Yeah.
And suddenly it seems like they're both going to be playing for Sunderland within the next 6 months. Where's Brown start?
Yeah, well, if they could be involved in a goal of such comedic brilliance as Wes Brown was this weekend, I support that. But I think some of that is that their reputation was enhanced because they were playing at Manchester United under Sir Alex Ferguson. I'm not sure that any of their performances for England ever really warranted them being called the central defenders of England's future, Rod.
McNair, poised to come on. He was standing by the assistant, the little 19-year-old. You say his hair is too...
Oh, it's far too conservative. He doesn't have an absurd haircut. How could he possibly be a future star in the Premier League with such a normal haircut?
But as he stood there by the substitutes board, I began to wonder whether it's Chevrolet dragging down Manchester United's global brand or Manchester United dragging down Chevy's at What Is Meals. Mm-hmm. Said, unless United have installed Wi-Fi in their jerseys, as Chevy have done with their cars,
yeah.
I think the answer is pretty obvious.
Mm-hmm.
And then it became about City imposing themselves. Yaya in his midfield perch, the penalty shouts you've mentioned that were turned down by Michael Oliver, who gave Fellaini carte blanche to knock down any City player in the penalty area. But anyway, he's become such a doomed, tragicomic character, Fellaini. It's hard to believe I used to love that man, David. I feel about him how I imagine Julia Roberts feels when she looks at Lyle Lovett. One thing I do admire about him, though, he's got more hair densely packed into one eyebrow than you and I have on our heads combined. And then there was a moment of quality.
There was. I'm still thinking, by the way, I would not be surprised if tomorrow I read in the newspaper that Manchester United have installed Wi-Fi in those jerseys. That just wouldn't surprise me.
I'd love it.
Whatsoever.
Get on it.
Yeah, the moment of quality. Amazing ball from Yaya to Clichy down the left. Rog, sort of slide rule pass. Clichy cuts it back. Aguero always seems to be there. They always seem to be able to find the little Argentinian, Rog.
5 goals in 6 games against United.
Smashes it into the roof of the net, Rog.
Treats United just like their Spurs in red.
Yeah.
And you kind of thought game over then, didn't you?
Yeah, but then Manchester United came at them, Rog. Rooney, who had a particularly strong game, I thought. Just aggressive. Looks to have some of his speed back, Rog. That might have something to do with what's going on with the hair on his head. I think the full rug might have affected his speed for some time.
But that ball pace at the back, it cuts down wind resistance.
It does. Problems in sector 3.4.
Yeah, there's that great crazy run.
Jinky, mazy run.
And then he remembered he was English and he just fell over at the last second. And then Fellaini got the mechanics of his header all wrong, arching his back in disgust like Robert Capa's falling
shoulder
soldier.
Shoulder hair, or perhaps shoulder hair.
And that was it.
Yeah.
So-so performance on the field again for City, but another win. They're 6 points back from Chelsea. They've won 6 and lost just 1. It's amazing to me of the Manchester derbies over the past couple of seasons. It's their first 4 straight wins in the fixture since December 1970, Davo, back when Tears of a Clown was number 1, Smokey Robinson and the Miracles. How do you look at this from a United perspective?
I think United are, you know, lots been made of their record right now under Van Gaal. They've got less points than they had under Moyes. But I do think they're better. And I think one of the reasons is they've got a lot of players you can believe in. Some of the new players you can believe in, Rog. Di Maria, I mean, he's a fantastic, fantastic Premier League player. I think Daley Blind is proving himself. I mean, his first game was his best game still, but he still looks like class. He looks like Premier League class out there. I think Luke Shaw starting to look like, oh, he could be an interesting Premier League player. Some of the other young guys have come on. Fellaini, I think, though, you know, perhaps should have scored, perhaps could even have given away a penalty, but he looks more aggressive than he did last year.
Hope, ultimately, is what we're really, the currency that we're trading in here. For me, United should summon as much or possibly even more pride from this loss than as they did in the 1-1 draw against Chelsea.
Yeah.
But then I think, is that what it's come to now for United, taking encouragement in defeat? And I guess judging the campaign so far, they're 13 points behind Chelsea. It's a club's worst start to a season since 86-87. And I have to ask, how is Van Gaal not getting more crap? I mean, yes, even Moyes had a better start. It's a bit of a deceiving kind of way to approach the issue. One bloke inherited the car keys when the club were champions and then proceeded to drive the car straight into the garage wall at speed. The other man has to get the dents out of that car. Well, yes, with £157 million worth of metalwork. But one bloke seemed to defecate his pants on the sideline while the other keeps his head about him when all those are losing theirs. And I think that's the difference.
Great
isn't
point.
It?
It's about presence. It's kind of what I always think. I always feel like I know who's going to win the presidency in the United States because just from pure television terms, I figure out which one is better on television.
Kevin Love.
And you look at them right now and you look at Van Gaal in his post-match interviews, even though I don't understand every word he's saying, he seems in control. He seems composed. He seems to be in charge. Rog. Moyes never seen that way.
One of my teachers when I was growing up, a despicable man called Pete Stott, he always used to scream, "Bullshit baffles brains, lads! Bullshit baffles brains!" And I kind of think Louis van Gaal understands that. I mean, going back to your issue about hope, Davo, Moyes bought Fellaini. Van Gaal has brought in Falcao, Di Maria, Blint. And they are hope, Davo. They're like phantom limbs, those players. Falcao is like a phantom limb. You can feel them even if they're not there. And that feeling is one of hope and momentum.
Yeah, Southampton. Rojo went down injured, Rog. That could be another costly loss for them for part of this season, Rog. Okay, the shock of the weekend, Rog. Newcastle 1, Liverpool 0. Alan Pardew's men win their 3rd league game on the trot thanks to the right foot of substitute Jose Perez, who pounced on a botched Liverpool clearance in the 73rd minute. After a slow start, Newcastle have lost just 1 of their last 6 league games and are 12th in the table.
It's all Roy Hodgson's fault, David.
Clearly.
This is a game best summed up by GFOP at S Bragg, who tweeted, "In the trade-off between excellent hair and excellent football, it appeals, the hairstyles have the upper hand.
Yeah.
It was a sloppy first half of football. My most interesting first half notes concern the complex tonsorial clash between Sami Amiobi and Raheem Sterling and two natural gingies, Balotelli and Colback. By the way, it's amazing how many of you have fallen in love with the name Sami Amiobi. He's the new god Shamagod. He's a god Shamagod of his generation.
Name, Sami Amiobi.
What's happened to Liverpool? Last season, so pacey and precise. This season, they seem slow, clumsy, little in the way of wit. Thrusting Coutinho, in particular, out to the flank seems a complete waste.
Well, as we've talked about it before, the decline in the form of a football team is exponential. One player starts playing a little weaker. That not only affects him, it affects the person he's passing to.
Wheels have been
affects
wheels.
The person he's passing to. And, you know, suddenly Suarez gone, gave that team collective belief. They started the season okay. Sturridge injury really sort of knocks them back. Balotelli not training, not playing with the energy. You know, it's just an odd figure to go and have around. And suddenly all of Brendan Rodgers' David Brent-like training regimes and mannerisms that seem to all work so well last season. We're back to being Liverpool days, Rog, a little bit. This is a bit being Liverpool, this team.
I mean, it's fascinating. The commentators had so little to talk about by way of action. They seem to spend most of the game trying to decode Mario Balotelli's body language.
Yeah.
And I do, with him, I do feel decoders, they kind of fall short on it. He's always had his own vibe on the field.
Yeah. Even when he's had fantastic games, he's sort of had the same amount of energy.
He reminds me of like that the Grateful Dead bassist, Phil Lesh, whose negative charisma became its own kind of charisma. But the more the game went on, the more confident you felt Newcastle became. They are young, they are fast, at times they're fearless. And that goal, they didn't so much break apart Liverpool's defences, give it many opportunities to clear the ball, which they obligingly failed to do so. Alberto Mourinho, again looking confused. And Perez, he almost just pounced just to put Liverpool out of their misery.
Yeah.
10 points out of 12 for Newcastle. Liverpool goalless for the second game on the run. Now they don't have QPR defenders to put the ball into the net for them. The goals seem to have dried up. And they appear so bad, Liverpool, that Chevrolet are rumoured to be mulling a jersey sponsorship bid. Tough for Liverpool fans to deal with. I mean, they're going to play Real Madrid this afternoon. They're putting out a ghost side.
Yeah.
Saving the powder for the league so they can get back into the Champions League next season.
And of course, they play Chelsea at the weekend. They've got a huge game.
Yeah, they must be rubbing their eyes, blinking, wondering if last season was all just an ecstatic, feverish dream like Kafka's Metamorphosis, where they've woken up in bed to find out that their club has transformed itself into a large insect.
Somebody sent us that picture, Rog, of Brendan Rodgers, together with the caption, is like, we all want to believe. And that is so, it seems to be this collective. They so much want to believe in Brendan Rodgers. I think it's a very interesting game this weekend, a very interesting couple of weeks coming up for
Liverpool. Great tweet from GFOP John Green, who told us that he just told my kids, Daddy's going to eat some of your Halloween candy and then take a sad nap. See you all at noon.
That's so great. It's
a funny thing. In the wake of it and around it, it's all the Steven Gerrard talk, David.
Yeah.
I'm going to go to another club. We want you to stay. Manchester City are keen on bringing in Steven Gerrard. I don't quite understand it. It's almost like Kobe Bryant being rewarded with a big contract for his past performances.
Well, I do sort of understand it. You know, went up to Liverpool last year and I met about 15 guys who claim to be Steven Gerrard's best mate. We went to Brazil. We met at least five or six of them.
We met six people who claimed to have been his best man at his wedding.
No, we had a lot of best men. It was sort of one of those Chinese-style weddings. And you can just imagine that now all of these best men, all of these best mates are going to the press.
He's going to New York Cosmos.
That was one of the rumours. He's going to New York, to the Cosmos. I love it. There's a lot of that stuff going on with Gerrard. But I wonder, he seems, whereas Lampard still seems to sort of, well, you know, he's injured right now, but he still seems to have the legs, still seems to be able to move around the field. Gerrard, just watching, is sort of sad, even on that goal this weekend. He's got very leaden-legged.
I'm loath to quote Sting at any time, David.
Yeah.
But this is a clear case of if you love somebody, set them free.
Although you do the Russians love their children too, played at your funeral, I believe. I've got that written down as a note somewhere, case I have to get in an argument.
I've made myself believe that Sting didn't sing that song. He's going to the New York Cosmos.
Yeah, it's very, very true. Down in London, Rog, Chelsea 2, Queen's Park Rangers 1, the West London Derby. Rog doesn't have the same ring. Two teams close in geographic proximity, but miles apart in the table. Oscar started the scoring in the 32nd minute when he tucked a curling outside of the boot effort just inside Rob Green's right post. QPR drew level through a very clever, certainly on the replay looked very clever, Charlie Austin backheel in the 62nd minute. But 50 minutes from full time, a clumsy Eduardo Vargas, a.k.a. Chilly Willy, challenge on Eden Hazard resulted in a penalty. The big bottom Belgian converted, oh, the old no look, keeping Chelsea 4 points clear at the top of the table. Yep. You know, we said earlier, Rog, about Manchester City's performance that was, you know, underwhelming. This was a very underwhelming performance by Chelsea as well.
It was. I mean, I think they were numbed a little bit by the unveiling of John Terry's new haircut.
Oh, my God. What is he thinking?
It's very Peaky Blinders.
Yeah.
On our show, we discussed it at length.
Yeah.
But the at Monica numbers, Ted, John Terry's new haircut seems to indicate that for Halloween, he dressed up as Macklemore's dad. Which I kind of just, I don't quite understand, but I do love. But let's talk about happy Chelsea things. The goal, Dave. I'm not sure what I preferred. Was it the outside the boot finish? Was it the way Cesc pulled in four defenders? Or was it Fabregas's nipple graze celebration, Dave?
All three were great, and all three you wouldn't have seen last year. We didn't have a player like Fabregas who could suck in defenders in that way and run with the ball from midfield. And his assist record right now, Rog, is absolutely outrageous.
Well, snide trolling Arsenal stat of the day. Yeah. Fabregas now has as many assists this season.
9.
As Mesut Ozil managed the whole of last season.
So we got that. You've got Oscar, a player now not preparing for a World Cup with the country's, you know, expectations on his frail little shoulders, playing. I mean, we've seen Oscar play some great Premier League football before, Rog, but I would say in the last few weeks, Oscar is just better than he ever was. And the nipple-on-nipple celebration, Rog, is one of my favourite celebrations of the season.
Well, man, who wasn't impressed.
In a season of great celebrations. Jose Mourinho wasn't impressed.
Every time the camera cut away to him,
He
looked miserable.
Yeah.
He was like, it reminded me of Robin Williams in The Fisher King.
Well, maybe he was unhappy with his outfit. He went with the scarf again, without a sweater, without an overcoat, Rog.
There's three things in this world you need.
Yeah.
Respect for all kinds of life.
Yeah.
A nice bowel movement on a regular basis.
True.
And a navy blazer.
Yeah, it's very true.
Robin Williams.
Yeah.
Fisher King. Chelsea.
Yeah.
They love to let a lead slip away.
Yeah, but that was way too early. But a great goal from Charlie Austin.
He scored 24 league goals for QPR since the start of last season, which is 18 more than anyone else on that team.
Uh-huh.
Classic 2014-15 Chelsea. But narrative suggested immediately the win was never in doubt, was it?
No, it was way too early. Had to come, Rog.
Which makes me ask the question, David. Mm-hmm. Are you afraid of death?
No, not at all. I was talking about this at lunch with my mate Joe. Not afraid of death in any way. Could happen any day now.
Yeah, I'm not afraid at all, David. I do actually try and pack my life full of stuff as a result.
In the white room, if you're in a white room, walls are white, ceilings are white, floors are white, everything's white. All you can see is white. You're in the white room.
I'm imagining your dining room.
Yeah, so it's not like that. What's your instinct in the white room? What do you want to do in the white room?
I'm afraid I'll lose sight and pleather, and I'm imagining the white room is made of a lot of it.
Interesting. Never heard that answer. I asked everybody that question. That's meant to be how you face death.
Oh, really?
And people generally fall into two categories. There are people who go to sleep, and there are people who panic and just want to figure a way to get out of the white room. And that's how people face death. Ask your mates that question.
I'd probably write a book. I'd do something.
It'd be a bit late.
I'd do something. I'd definitely do something.
Yeah.
I can't just sit there.
In the white room.
Do people really just go to sleep?
Lots of people go to sleep.
Oh, it's a waste of time.
I go to sleep.
I'd probably try and write some bad poetry.
Some people meditate.
No.
Some people think of their grandparents. It's interesting what people... You don't tell them that it's about death before you ask the question, but just create the space for your mates or your family members. Ask them about the white room. It's meant to be how we face death.
So people tell you they're asleep. Is that a euphemism for masturbating?
Some people say masturbate.
Okay. You mate Joe.
No, not Joe. Not Joe. Joe's very comfortable in the white room. Okay, Rog. But anyway, good win for Chelsea. They stay 4 points clear at the top of the table from Southampton, Rog. They're unlikely pursuers.
Mourinho. Odd comments at the end that you'll have to explain to me.
Oh.
At this moment, it's difficult for us to play at home, though, because playing here is like playing in an empty stadium. It's a quiet, soft game. When we play at home, it's frustrating.
Very true. And I think anybody who's ever seen Chelsea play away is always surprised at how vocal Chelsea's fans are on the road. And also, if you go to a Champions League midweek game at Chelsea, one of the great atmospheres in English football, Stamford Bridge on a midweek evening. But it is true, on Saturdays and Sundays, those afternoon kickoffs, it can be brutal at Chelsea. Very quiet, too many tourists, too many posh snobs in the expensive seats, and it's just tough.
Socioeconomic demographic chant of the day for me came at this game, and it was tweeted by at Rory Smith Times, who is a terrific writer.
Yeah,
he said QPR fans telling Chelsea that, quote, West London is ours, though it actually belongs to a collection of oligarchs, bankers, and the indolent rich.
Yeah, that's
must
very,
have
very
something
true.
To do with it.
Very true. In North London, Rog, meanwhile, Arsenal 3, Burnley 0, two goals from Alexis Sanchez and one from young Englishman Callum Chambers. Rog, lift
the future.
The Gunners over lifeless Burnley. Arsenal sit in fourth and are unbeaten in their last 23 Premier League games at the Emirates. Burnley, meanwhile, continue to take on water with just 4 points from the first 10 games.
Yep, it's an odd game. It was a shooting gallery for the first 70 minutes.
Yeah.
Alexis Sanchez, he just seems to be operating on a higher mental plane. He's like watching Aldous Huxley in cleats.
Maybe the way that he wears his shorts, the way that he pulls them up, and sometimes one short leg up, one down, that is the way that we will all be wearing our shorts in the future.
In the future.
Yeah.
It did become a bit frustrating for Arsenal fans. Burnley defended like Doom Samurai at the Battle of Shiryama in 1877, but then the siege was broken.
Yeah.
I didn't understand how that siege was broken. It was Alexis Sanchez that did it. It was a headed goal. He headed it against two defenders. He's 5 foot seven, David.
Yeah.
Kieran Trippier is 5 foot ten. Michael Duff is 6 foot one.
Yeah.
The Burnley defenders. And then I've watched it several times on replay. Mm-hmm. And I think I can detect a faint trail of Draco Noir acting like a chloroform soaked towel across their mouth.
Yeah.
16 games, 10 goals, 3 assists. Manchester City's scouting system must have just opened the file on what they call a little-known Chilean sniper. He's playing like a man who'll be wearing the blue of City within 12 months.
Oh, God, that's going to cut Arsenal fans so hard saying that, Rog.
Where would they be without him this season?
Well, they wouldn't be anywhere near there, I can tell you that. I mean, he's been their best player by a mile. And certainly, the reason why I still feel, I know I've been mocked and ridiculed for saying that I think Arsenal are potential champions this season, but in many ways, it's tough to look across the Premier League and see a more complete player than Alexis Sanchez this season. A player who at any moment you feel can go and change the game. And very often, this is the old Bill Simmons rule, the player, the team with the best player tends to win. And I think in many ways, he's the MVP this season.
I spoke to my mate Michael Cohen this morning and asked him that very question, the most positive Arsenal fan in the world.
We're Alexis's team now.
He said, I think there's much to be buoyant about, he said. I said, why? And he said, because we've got our crap games out of the way early on. Which is just the most amazing logic of all time. He said, what we do in January in terms of the transfers will reveal what are Arsenal's true title aspirations for this season. But good news, Arsenal fans, you've got your crap games out of the way early.
That's good. There is certainly, I saw another one of my mates this morning is an Arsenal fan who certainly feels as though this is a team just coming into form at the right point of the season as we head into the holidays and that crammed fixture schedule.
Quick word on Burnley. I thought Heaton was arguably the man of the match, the goalkeeper.
Uh-huh.
But next for them are Hull City at home, Stoke City away, and then Villa, hapless Villa at home. You feel they must get at least one win for Sean Dyche or the Premier League. Maybe one gingy worse off.
Yes, very true. Talking of Hull, Rog, played at home against Southampton this weekend. They lost 1-0. The Ronald Koeman show rolls on and the Saints scoop up another 3 points at the KC Stadium. In just the third minute, Hull keeper Eldin Jakupovic's...
He's a Swiss Bosnian, Dave.
...poor clearance fell to the feet of Victor Wanyama, who hammered. He thronked it home.
3-point
range.
From
40 yards. Rog, Southampton remains second, just 4 points behind Chelsea.
Another victory, another clean sheet, 10 wins in the last 11 games, second place retained. I think 6 clean sheets this season, is it? Nathaniel Klein receiving a lot of plaudits after this game. It's a great piece I read this week by Henry Winter, The Telegraph. He's kind of the doyen of English journalists. He wrote a beautiful piece about the bedrock that Southampton's youth development programme, Luke Shaw, Chambers, Oxlade Chamberlain, Theo Walcott, Gareth Bale, and all the new talent like James Ward-Prowse.
Yeah.
And he identifies that no team invests more in the ages between 7 and 12 as Southampton. They have a strategy called the Southampton Way, huge emphasis put on the early years, and then they try and have as many of their young players train with the first team as possible, with a goal to having 50% of the squad be homegrown. It's absolutely phenomenal. It's paying dividends. We're going to win the league, sang the Southampton fans. And I can only think how well-timed this spike is by Ronald Koeman's team. How many post-World Cup new American fans are going to be Southampton now till they die?
Yeah. And I know it's fashionable to think that Southampton are going to fade over the Christmas period so many games are played. And yet their defensive record, you know, it's so solid at the back. They're hard to break down. And just front to back, side to side, all across the field, they have strength. And in a year when, as we said at the top, there's only one team really firing on all cylinders, there are a lot of sort of average teams in the Premier League who are takeable for a team with as much quality as Southampton. That's what I feel.
Talking about quality.
Aston Villa 1, Tottenham 2. Villa loses its sixth straight after Spurs score twice in the game's final minutes. An Andreas Weimann slump buster. They actually scored a goal, said John Champion. Gave Villa its first league goal since mid-September. But late Spurs goals from Nasser Chadli, love it, the way that Redknapp said his name, and substitute Harry Kane leave Villa free-falling down the table, Rog.
Aston Villa, feel for you. The club were forced to cancel their goal of the month competition because he didn't score at all in October. You know, Ronaldo had scored 20 times since Villa had last scored a goal. You and I, Davo, have scored as many goals as all 36 members of the Villa squad over the 50 days preceding this game. So I took great pleasure in Andreas Weimann's goal.
Yeah.
It was less a goal. By the way, fine work by Charles and Zogbia on the flanks.
Yep.
It was less a goal. It was more like watching an old man down some collective stool softeners and then gobble some prunes, castor oil and fibre bars and just go for it. Spurs fans were absolutely beside themselves. At PHLU tweeted us, at Men in Blazers, my Spurs are as soft as Mick Discarude's hair after a deep conditioning.
Yeah, it's very true.
How bad did Spurs look?
Spurs look pretty poor, but this is something that Spurs very rarely do, which is eke out a victory when they're not playing very well. So this is actually progress, significant progress for Spurs. Yes, there was some good fortune to the winning goal, Rog.
Harry Kane, the second coming, he meant, Davo, he saw Baker's fine-looking head and he meant to bank it in off that. I'm sure he called that shot on the free kick.
You and I were talking about this game on Monday, Rog. Your point is absolutely correct that everybody's lauding Harry Kane and what a performance when he came on. It wasn't really much of a performance. He just ran around with more intensity than any of the other Tottenham players previously.
I mean, 58th minute he came on.
Yeah.
The Chinkford suburban London lad.
Yeah.
Yet to start Chinkford. A Premier League game. I think he scored 8 times in cup football. He's a distinctive looking bloke. Yeah. He looks like Ryan Gosling and Jennifer Aniston had a baby.
Yeah.
And he didn't so much supercharge his team. He just, to me, he proved how little effort the rest of them had given before they came on. They're a very, very odd team, Spurs. Adebayor and Soldado up front are absolutely blunt. Danny Rose and Kyle Norton are absolutely erratic. And it's one of the fascinating parts of this season, the great creaking flip-flops in narrative. Brendan Rodgers dominates last season. This season, we're starting to wonder whether it was all about just kick it to Lewis and hope good stuff occurs.
Yeah.
In the same way, Pochettino was seen as a kind of stoic genius at Southampton, and he's beginning to be seen as a guy who benefited from the depth of young talent at that club and is not as astute as advertised. But in the end, Harry Kane, one of our own, sang the Spurs fans about this cult hero who's now, you were laughing, how he's being hailed as not just Spurs' saviour,
but England's saviour. Roger's going to get a call up for England. I must say, I woke up at 5 in the morning and I just was struck by this thought that there are going to be people around Tottenham, around the football club, who are going to be shaking their heads in disbelief that Harry Kane scored with that style, that very continental style of run up and try to toe poke the ball and put topspin on it. I guarantee Harry Kane will try that free kick for the rest of his career at Tottenham and England. He will never score another goal in that way.
We build them up to chop them down in England. Yes, we do. Six straight loss for Villa.
Yeah.
Start of the season seems so long ago when they took 10 points from, I think, the opening four games. They beat Liverpool 1-0 away. And Lambert signed a new four-year contract immediately. The American owner, Randy Lerner. I mean, it's brutal. He's cost-cutting. He's shopping the club. There's uncertainty everywhere and squalid performances on the field. Honestly, I'm surprised there's not more kind of fan disorder and discontent in the Midlands, because if it was Newcastle, they'd be mounting the barricades right now.
Yeah, it's very true. In other games, Rog, West Ham fought back from 2-0 down. Good for you, Hammers. Scoring twice in the last half hour to snatch a point against Stoke. An explosion of goals for Sunderland, including a brace for Stephen Fletcher. Baldy. Lifted the Black Cats out of the relegation zone at Crystal Palace. West Brom, Rog, collected all 3 points against Leicester after an Esteban Cambiasso own goal. Great own goal. Quality, Rog. Leicester has failed to score in three straight. What was once casual dalliance with the relegation zone looks in danger of morphing into a serious relationship. We're going to need to talk to Arlo White, Leicester City fan and native, about that. And, Rog, Everton 0, Swansea 0. How did you enjoy that game, Rog?
It's like being pummeled in the kidneys.
Yeah.
It was Everton's first goalless draw in their last 37 Premier League games.
Wow.
Roberto Martinez said cryptically, "It's like when you go to the cinema expecting to see an outstanding film and the hopes are so high you end up disappointed." I watched the game with my dad.
Yeah.
It was a reminder where I get the negativity and pessimism from.
What was the... Did it annoy you, his pessimism?
Yeah. I found it awful. In his mind, we were defeated before the ball had been kicked. He spent a huge amount of time mumbling about possession and lack of decisiveness in the final third.
And he's right, though.
The leaf does not fall far from the tree, Dave.
He's right. It's almost, though, that this season, sort of where you sit in the sort of mid to upper table, it doesn't matter if you draw a game like this at home. I don't think it's a bad result, Rog. Anyway, Rog, in America, a new team in Los Angeles.
He has risen.
Yeah, one of our many footballing dreams came true last week. Vincent Tan is coming to America. He's part of an eclectic, to say the least, ownership group that will bring a second NMLS team to Los Angeles to replace Chivas USA. Los Angeles FC, clever name, will debut in 2017 under the guidance of the aforementioned Mr. Tan, as well as Magic Johnson, Mia Hamm, and many more, including motivational speaker guru Tony Robbins. Rog.
How are we not part of that cartel?
I don't know. I never even got... I'm sort of offended that I never even... I've got a call from a few MLS teams. I never even got a call from Los Angeles FC.
I feel like it's a party that somehow we didn't get invited to.
Yeah.
Not a very good party.
Yeah.
At PDX Webster said, Vincent Tan, Magic Johnson, Tony Robbins, please broadcast owners' meetings online, Exposure. The thing that cracked me up about this...
He's going to have the team playing blue and white pinstripes. That's what I can't wait for. He's going to do something wacky.
Oh, players, undies, shorts, tuckings in.
Yeah.
The thing that cracked
long
me
trousers.
Up, the thing that cracked me up about the announcement
was
that they announced also that the name and the logo will be designed with input from fans.
Yeah.
What fans can a club with no name, no players, and no identity have?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it depends whether you believe in nature or nurture. You really, really believe in nature. So here it is for free. Here's the name that I think they should go with.
Yeah.
They should call the team LA Law.
That is genius.
Arnie Beckup. Oh,
yeah. That'd be amazing. Why is the team in Miami not called the Miami Vice? Why?
Oh, I'd love it if LA Law played Miami Vice. That would get a lot of people watching. If LA Law played Miami Vice.
Should have been NYPD Blue is what they should have called it in New York City.
It's the future. Take it for free.
Chicago Hope. These were all, television has given us great names.
We dispense this strategic consultancy advice for free.
The Dallas Ewings. We could have had so many good team names just by going to television. It would have been so good. In news that will affect where Americans travel for the 2018 World Cup third place game, FIFA President Sepp Blatter has hit back at those who've suggested the tournament should be moved from Russia due to the country's conflict with Ukraine. And feeling about same-sex marriage and gay, lesbian rights in general.
Just generally approach to race in all aspects.
You're right. Blatter was in Moscow alongside President Vladimir Putin last week to unveil Russia 2018's official emblem. In a geopolitical gaffe befitting FIFA, the unveiling featured a map of Russia that included Crimea, the source of the country's conflict with Ukraine.
Oh, why just Crimea?
That's what why, not, said. Why not the rest of Europe?
Yep, just bang it all in.
Yeah.
First of all, the logo. I like it.
You do?
Yeah.
Okay.
It looks like an oligarch's Fabergé-encrusted sex toy, which I actually think is fabulous.
I need to take another look at it. I saw it. It does. Yeah.
But Putin meeting Sepp Blatter. Mm-hmm. To me, it's like what a meeting between two super creepy Rob Lowe's would look like. But anyway, thanks to everyone that has tweeted us to say
they both have cable.
That 1990s Rob Lowe and super creepy Rob Lowe were actually the same person.
The St. Elmo's Fire era.
What do you imagine? Rob Lowe. It's like, by the way, I watched that last night.
Yeah.
For the first time in a long time.
I love that.
And
film.
I watched The Breakfast. I couldn't sleep. I watched
which
St. Elmo's Fire and The Breakfast.
Which film has aged better, The Breakfast Club or St. Elmo's Fire?
I think
The
Breakfast Club has.
Yeah, it's a classic
but
film.
It's almost impossible to watch it and just wonder how so many of those careers just... Why is Molly Ringwald still not astride the world? It's a mystery that I do not understand whatsoever. We'll discuss it on our other
point.
Podcast
too much
today.
Saxophone.
Today in Molly
in
Ringwald.
Almost fine.
I mean, 1 minute she was going out of Ad Rock.
Yeah.
She was amazing.
Yeah. She still is.
We'll have to have her on the show and we'll discuss it with her person
definitely.
To person. What do you imagine it's like when Putin and Blatter get together? My mind simply cannot calibrate the evil.
Yeah. What would it smell like? I mean, Putin and Blatter, just the smell. Ugh.
The smell of Euros, I should imagine.
Euros, stale tobacco, Drakkar Noir.
Yeah, I mean, the
urine.
Here's how I've tried to think about this, because my mind literally, it's like trying to imagine infinity.
Yeah.
But the best I can do is to think back to 1986.
Yeah.
When the Pope met Mother Teresa in Calcutta.
Uh-huh.
And he visited a refuge for the sick and the dying.
Uh-huh.
He arrived, she climbed into the famous white Pope mobile.
Yeah.
She kissed his hand, he kissed the top of her head.
Yeah.
She took him into her home, the Sacred Heart, that was packed with people suffering from cancer, malnutrition, and tuberculosis.
Yeah.
And they spent the afternoon feeding the sick and the dying.
Yeah.
I imagine Blatter and Putin getting together as the opposite of this meeting. It's as far the opposite of this meeting as possible, David.
Yeah, it's the antithesis of that, Rog. Okay. Our guest today, Rog.
Oh, really?
Is an Englishman who understands our unbridled love of America.
Walter White.
He served on the front lines of the Pacific Northwest's football revolution as a commentator for Seattle Sounders. Before returning home to cover the Premier League for NBC, he's an erudite and eloquent gent whose play-by-play pours out of our television like poetry every weekend. Most importantly, he knows how to pronounce Leicester. We welcome back to the pod, Arlo White.
Hello, chaps. It's Leicester.
I know. You have no idea how many people say to me, it is Leicester, right? Leicester. And I go, yeah, absolutely, Leicester. Or Leicester, depending on which part of town you're from.
Enough frippery, Arlo. We're going to go straight to the question that America's up in arms about.
Yes.
They're up in arms about Mike Ashley and the Bacon Butties. What the heck, man?
I was stunned upon our arrival at St. James's Park. You always get a very friendly welcome, and they pride themselves on how they look after not just press people like us who get in for free, but everyone that visits St. James's Park, one of the cathedrals of English football. Now, I must say before I go any further that the NBC team do bring our own snacks to all Premier League grounds. We are well looked after. We visit the local supermarket before the game. We make sure we can feed ourselves. Having said that, we were partial to the odd beautiful bacon or sausage roll at St. James's Park before a game. And we walked in, and the guys, they're lovely, shook our hands, gave us our programme, asked if we had any questions, and he said, I've got to say one thing. We are deeply embarrassed. Mr. Ashley, our boss, has banned the food and the catering in the press room. So there was no bacon butty. I said it. I wasn't hungry. I wasn't moaning. I merely mentioned it as another example of the feud between Mike Ashley and the Newcastle United fans at the weekend.
Thousands upon thousands of American football fans are now pitchforks at the ready, they just don't know where Newcastle is. They have absolutely no clue which part of London Newcastle is in. But we've got a great question.
Northeast London.
At MJ Swenson wanted to know, Arlo White, what is the best stadium for media, food and drink, and which is the worst?
Well, I would say the best, I think you've got to be looking at Arsenal, very good. I don't tend to eat a lot. I have a banana at half-time, that's it, I'm happy. I need to stay caffeinated, that's all. So Arsenal, very, very good indeed. Where else? Probably Chelsea, actually. Yeah, they look after the press very well. There was a suggestion on Twitter that we weren't supposed to accept anything from a team that you're covering because all journalistic,
integrity.
Ideals, go out of the window. But I must say, it would take more than a bacon roll to influence me on one side or
really,
the other.
Really, I was thinking,
I'd give quite a lot for a bacon roll.
Yeah, for a pie.
Yeah, without a doubt. So this season, Arlo, I mean, we are now 10/38ths, as you know, you're a man of science, that reduces to 5/19ths of the way through the Premier League season. I mean, already, narrative upon narrative upon narrative. How do you keep up?
It's difficult, but it's thrilling at the same time. I mean, the weekend just passed. The Manchester derby was absolutely thrilling, I thought. I think I used the word pulsating more than once, probably on Sunday afternoon. So much going on there. The day before was
Newcastle. You definitely used the word delicious. I like the word delicious. I like the use of the word delicious.
I think it was a Di Maria set piece, if I remember.
Almost certainly. Delicious.
Yeah,
that deserved
he delivered
more.
In.
Deserved
yeah,
more.
Yeah, he did. Newcastle-Liverpool the day before and Pardew's renaissance and Brendan Rodgers and Liverpool struggling. Each and every single week brings something new, compelling. You know, the goals are flying in. What a league to cover. It is a thrill ride every weekend. It's such a pleasure to turn up at these games and cover these games for the United States audience because we just don't know what's going to happen next and just expect the unexpected. It's fabulous.
Yeah, I mean, there is the narrative thrill, but you definitely enhance it. For our show, the Men in Blazers show, the utter crap, which I will hope you never feast your eyes upon in England, Arlo.
I already get it sent over, Rod.
Oh, please.
I watch it each and every week.
Hide your twins away from it. But we always have a segment, which unfortunately, because we only have a couple of minutes of television every week, we've never quite got to. But it's called
it's hit the cutting room floor a few times.
It's called The Poetry of Arlo White. I think we started it when you called Giroud's head his meaty French forehead.
Oh, we loved it. His meaty French forehead.
And you called Spurs a lifeless carcass. Which I adored. This game's gone bonkers, you said during the Liverpool QPR game. Suited and booted. You talked about Pochettino.
Oh, we love that.
Each one is gorgeous. But I've got to ask you about the etymology of a word you've used on more than one occasion, and I adore it. Those horrible moments when the football is over for the day and I don't know what to do with myself all my life, it just seems devoid of meaning. I replay moments of your great commentary. And I think that the thing I love most is when a manager on the sideline has his hands on his hips and you say, the teapot for Alan Pardew.
The teapot.
Where did you get the teapot from? Etymology.
It comes from, would it be Jonathan Agnew or somebody in the cricket world? And I think he was describing a former Pakistan captain called Inzamam ul-Haq, who was a fabulous batsman. Didn't like training. Didn't like any physical exertion whatsoever. In fact, when he was captain and he made his way up until that lofty position, he sat in a wicker chair on the outfield directing the rest of his teammates running around the field doing the exercise and doing the pre-match rituals. But no one could touch him. He was untouchable in Inzamam ul-Haq. And when things were going badly in the field, I remember Jonathan Agnew, he had his hands on his hips, Inzi. And I actually got it wrong with Alan Pardew. He said, there's Inzi at mid-off performing the double teapot. And for a split second, you think, what on earth is he talking about? Then you look at it, and it just makes complete sense. The two handles, a double-handled teapot.
So good. More like a sugar bowl, almost. Also, with purpose. I like your use of with purpose. One of our GFOPs tweeted at us, I would just like to do one thing in my life that would be described as me having done it by Arlo White with purpose.
If he calls me whilst doing something within reason, with purpose,
yeah,
I can describe it live to that person.
Yeah, exactly. Anything. Could be pouring a cup of tea.
Arlo so White good. Brings the treacle. That should be
brings
on you.
The treacle.
He brings the treacle.
I love it.
Arlo, you've been away from the States for a while. And I must say, the country misses you.
Yeah.
But you're an incredible Americaphile. What is it being back there in England that you miss most about our fair shores here in the United States?
So much. I was up at 2 a.m. after having got back from Manchester on Sunday with my eyes on storks, trying to stay awake for the FC Dallas-Seattle Sounders playoff first leg the other day. I do miss Seattle. I do miss my Sounders. And I can say that now that the NBC MLS deal is coming to an end, I can start rooting for them again now in public, I suppose.
Bacon butty to get his integrity away.
Yeah, exactly. I miss being an hour away from New York City. I miss Grand Central Station, one of the greatest buildings I've ever been in. And the thrill, having watched Mad Men and every television program of the last 30 years to come out of the United States, it seems, the thrill of getting off a train from where you live and walking out into Grand Central Station was just magnificent. I always took time to stand there like a tourist and look around, maybe have a coffee, maybe a glass of wine in one of the nice restaurants up there. So the buzz of a city like New York.
Next time you come here, Arlo, I want to do that. I want to go back to where you used to live. Let's get on the train. It'll be like Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee, Rog. We'll get on a train with Arlo White and we'll come down into Grand Central, get off the train with Arlo, circular shot around him as he stares up into that cavernous ceiling.
I'll even dress up like Peggy Olson.
I would love to see you as Peggy. I'll be Don Draper. You can be Peggy Olson. It'll be absolutely magnificent. Huge game this weekend. Liverpool versus Chelsea. A rematch of that epic late season game last year, the Gerrard slip, the 2-0, you know, Mourinho pulled the rabbit out of the hat victory. A lot of retribution you would imagine Liverpool would like to visit on the Blue Invaders from down south.
Yeah.
For me, this feels like the first truly big game of the season. You know, Chelsea's unbeaten record, Liverpool trying to figure out exactly who they are, how good they're going to be this season. It's going to be a big one.
It is, and we've got it on NBCSN. Steve Bauer for us and Graham Rousseau will be at that one before I'm at QPR Man City later in the day on NBC with Lee Dixon. So that'll be interesting. And I think, Dave, looking at last season's game, it was an extraordinary occasion. And he was the killer of dreams, wasn't he, that day, Jose Mourinho? He said his team were expected to be the clowns, was it the phrase that he used? And he turned up and he just killed it. And he seemed to take real glee in it. He had the flu. He was unshaven. His eyes were popping out. And he killed the Reds' dreams that day. Six across the back, you know, young side in places, but a resilient team, well set up to kill the game and score on the break. And that's what they did. But both sides are in completely different places now. Liverpool not the marauding, swashbuckling, goal-scoring side that they were, although they still try and get men forward. But Chelsea are a far better, well-oiled outfit with a terrific striker in the best form of his life. So you'd expect Mourinho to play a more of an expansive game than he did last season.
Okay, Arlo and all GFOPs, it's come to that time. I know you've been following my purchase of the new GDOP, my puppy down in Columbia, Tennessee, the little black lab, the little fella. And we've had a naming competition amongst our GFOPs. Thousands and thousands have entered to name this dog. Got some great Pup Guardiola. That was a contender for a while. Didier Drogba was also...
Philip Barkin
was another excellent one. Thanks. But we wanted to bring you on to announce the winning name of the GDOP. We've had several people have entered this name, Rog. And so we're going to go to a draw-off to decide who actually wins the as-yet-to-be-determined amazing prize. The name of the GDOP is going to be, the little black lab, Arlo Black. It's going to be a little puppy in New York City, Arlo. And whenever you come to town, when you come to Grand Central, get off the train, you're going to come down to the crap part of Soho, and there's a dog named in your honour by the GFOPs of Men in Blazers, Arlo Black.
That's magnificent. I am so honoured by that. you need to take it to Stocksbridge, Massachusetts to Alex's restaurant, just a little bowl of food outside the great Arlo Guthrie inspired restaurant as well. That's wonderful.
That's so good. I'll send a picture for your girls, for your twins too, so they can see their father's namesake puppy in New York City.
I'm deeply honoured, Dave.
A dog's for life, not just for podcasts, Dave. I just hope you know what you're getting into. I'm
very excited about Arlo.
Last question
for you.
Hear
my son say his name. It's the cutest thing of all time. Arlo. He loves it. So good. Okay.
A lot of people love you, Arlo. A lot of people had requests, many of which bordered on the erotic, some into the perverse. Just to finish off, we're going to go with one from Davmap, who wanted to know, I guess this is probably for ringtone purposes, please can you ask Arlo White to channel Walter White and in his own language say, I am the one who knocks.
Do you know what, with that series, I am seven away from the end. I'm gripped by it, but I don't know what happens at the end. Okay.
I like to think of Walter White as your kind of your brother.
Right, yeah.
That's how I think about it when I watch the show. It really enhances my viewing pleasure. I am the one who knocks, Arlo. Give it to us.
If you don't provide me with a bacon roll, I am the one who knocks.
I am the one who knocks. I think we'd love to... Is there any way that you could weave I am the one who knocks into some Premier League commentary this season? That would be amazing.
Harry Redknapp, he's the one that knocks.
Oh, he's always knocking.
He's always the one that knocks.
He's always knocking. Always knocking. Arlo, we can't wait to hear you this weekend. You say QPR Man City is your game this weekend.
That's right. And then Swansea Arsenal on Sunday as well. So, again, thrilled to be doing it. And then we've got another international break, which they just get in the way, don't they?
International break three. To be more of them, and they seem to be longer.
What do you do for bacon butties during the international break? Or do you just go hungry?
I have to cook them myself, don't I? It's massively inconvenient.
What's the world coming to?
Okay, get back to your Kasabian records now. Your
corner
of the
shop.
Your corner shop, your return of the Mac. And
Engelbert Humperdinck, don't remember him.
Oh, yeah, that's
him.
Very true, very true. And we'll talk to you soon, Arlo.
Thanks so much.
All the best, chaps. Speak to you soon.
Love that man.
It's hard not to.
So, Rog, that's it. Arlo Black. What do you think of that name for the GDOP?
I think it's very interesting.
You're suddenly very concerned about this puppy and its welfare.
I am.
Okay.
I am.
This puppy is going to be loved. It's going to be so well taken care of.
Yep.
I can't wait to see you interacting with it.
I love dogs.
Okay, Rog, on to the Ravens. Our first Raven comes from Bobby Booth. Did you guys watch Der Klassiker that was Bayern München 2, Dortmund 1? I love the Premier League, but the more I watch the German Bundesliga, the more I believe if it was on a better network, it would have more of a following in America, as the fan experience looks amazing. Why is that?
Well, the problem for the Bundesliga, Dave, apart from the TV platform,
is it's all in German.
Yeah, it's language.
Yeah, it's a big problem.
I mean, it gives the English Premier League an incredible advantage, as does the fact that the Bundesliga, frankly, gave the English Premier League, as did the other European leagues, a standing start.
Yeah.
In the race for global branding. It was a great game. Mm-hmm. Pep Guardiola, to me, this is controversial, but I think he's the suavest ball man in history, of the whole history of hair thinning. Jurgen Klopp, the bear of a man who's got some Yo Gabba Gabba in his bloodline.
Yep.
And it was a game of bold, courageous, counter-attacking football from Dortmund, and then they became undone from two defensive blunders by US under-20 player turned Serbia international Nevin Subotic. Mm-hmm. What is amazing about the Bundesliga is that it's a fan-first culture. The Premier League, global television is the first and second priority.
Yeah.
But in Germany, they built colossal stadia. They have cheap tickets. Dortmund play for as little as $13.
Wow.
Huge crowds, immense standing areas, which were outlawed in England after the Hillsborough disaster. That yellow wall at Dortmund, 24,454 fanatics. One of the most stunning sights, I think, in the sporting world. And that fan focus goes all the way to ownership. There's a 50-plus-1 rule where members of a club must retain at least 51% ownership, which prevents a single owner. And that's it. Dortmund, fully enough, currently second from bottom, and that only on goal difference. The squad are playing on fumes this season.
Hmm. Interesting. The winner, Rog, of the coveted Guinness Men in Blazers Poet, Philosopher, Soccer Scribe, Raven of the Week is Greg Nusson from Los Angeles. Rog, dear Rog and Devo, as I write to you from the crap part of Los Angeles in a hipster cafe in Silver Lake that is oddly decorated like a Russian tea house, I cannot help but reflect on my sudden and unrelenting love affair with the world of football over the last few years, but which has only really caught fire since Jurgen Klinsmann's men shocked the world in Brazil. My love for the sport has now taken over my life and better moral judgment. I have, in fact, become so enamored by the sport that I can only classify my parents' decision not to raise me within it as borderline abuse. As a junior in college, I studied in Paris, and as I prepared to go abroad, I started to follow Paris Saint-Germain, who at the time could only sputter to a 13th place finish and had no idea the talismanic and probably crazy Ibrahimovic would someday be theirs. The French people I met would scoff at me when I told them I was a fan of their club, and in some ways, they were right. I knew nothing of the sport. I remained a casual fan until this past summer, when after graduating from Columbia in New York with a master's degree in acting, impressive, decided the best way to distract myself from a career of almost certain disappointment and debt would be to follow Liverpool as my EPL team. I've signed up for an intramural soccer league in LA, despite the fact that I haven't played competitive soccer since I was 7 years old and ran the opposite way. I now manage 6 squads on FIFA 2014. The life of a freelance actor affords much free time. And waking up as early as 4:45 in the morning to watch Liverpool barely manage to stay alive in the Premiership. I find myself closely following the seasons of many squads. Apart from Liverpool and Paris Saint-Germain, I follow the Galaxy in an MLS and have purchased season tickets with 2 of my compatriots. Hanover 96 in the Bundesliga for my grandfather, who was born there. Nottingham Forest, because I once spent 2 weeks in the town doing a show about Allen Ginsberg to an audience bewildered by American experimental art. And much less so, the Brisbane Roar in the Australian League for family ties. And Perugia in Serie B for a few magical weeks I once spent in the Italian country. Part of me seriously considers following a team in every level in every country, but I'm a realist and my heart can only take so much. My question is this. I wondered where the question was, Rog. My work has fallen to the wayside and my beard hair has reached Alexi Lalas-like length, not seen since his World Cup days. I find a certain happiness and inner peace I thought was only possible through years of expensive therapy payments. My fanhood for other sports seemed totally inconsequential, as do my loan repayments. Why pay off my loans when I can buy 10 more kits for teams I've never seen in person? Am I losing my mind, or have I reached a nirvana state only once dreamed of by the ancient Buddhists? Abrigado, rock on, Greg Nusson, pronounced like Robitussin.
I think we're treading on thin ice with this one.
I know, we've got to be careful.
We've got to get a lawyer to vet our answers.
Yeah. And a therapist.
I'll just say, as an Everton fan, I don't know much about Nirvana, Greg.
Yeah.
But the Buddha did teach, just as the great ocean has one taste, the taste of salt.
Yeah.
This Dhamma, these teachings, has one taste, the taste of freedom.
Uh-huh.
To me, it sounds as you, Greg, just might be experiencing the taste of a giant cosmic pie. Mm. Enjoy it.
Interesting. Who are your other teams in foreign leagues, Rog?
In Scotland, Dumbarton.
Yeah.
I adore them.
Yeah.
Because we used to have a cleaner called Mrs. Barton.
Yep.
Siena in Italy.
Yeah. You love that. I know you love that town, Rog.
Adore them. And that's it.
That's it.
That's all I've got for you.
Favourite team in Germany? Don't have one. Okay, Rog, your weekend looks like this. Liverpool versus Chelsea, 7:45 a.m. Saturday on NBCSN. QPR versus Manchester City. Arlo's commentating on that one. 12:30 p.m. Sunday on the network, NBC, Rog. Swansea versus Arsenal, 11 a.m. Sunday on NBCSN. Arlo's got that one too. In an MLS, Rog, DC United versus New York Red Bulls, 2:30 p.m. Saturday. The second leg of the Eastern Conference semi-final, Rog. Red Bull won the first leg 2-0 in New York.
Come on, Andy Johnson.
Will be live on NBC. Many ways to connect to us. One is through our Amazon Emporium, which helps keep the show going, Rog. Anytime you go on Amazon for items big or small, just click off the Emporium page and Men in Blazers gets a tiny percentage that allows us to cover the costs of creating the show. What are you putting into the Amazon store this week, Rog?
It's easy for me this week.
What is it?
The Sibley Guide to Birds by David Allen Sibley. Second edition.
I've got an old edition of that book.
Second edition.
Oh, I love it.
Audubon Birds of America for our generation. We both love our birds, don't we?
We're both a bit twitchy.
As a city dweller, I'm obsessed with flicking through the waterfowl, chickadees and cardinals.
Yeah.
They're all exquisitely reproduced.
Yeah.
And when I flick through the book,
yeah,
it's a massive book. I'm overwhelmed by an awe of nature and a love of this country.
Yeah.
And its natural abundance and diversity.
Yeah. Arlo's going to be chasing a lot of these pigeons.
Arlo Black.
Arlo Black Devo is going to be chasing a lot of these birds in the next few months. Rog, talking of Arlo Black, so my daughter's greatest fear is that when I wake up in the morning and I need to take Arlo out of the man loft, trademark pending, and take him to go and pee down on the street, that there'll be no one in the loft to take care of her, her little sister, and her little brother. I have a feeling that she's leveraged the whole idea of getting a dog just to get a cell phone. She's desperate for a cell phone. Instead, I had a better idea. The Motorola MH230R 23-mile range, 22-channel FRS GMRS two-way radio. That's a pair. Look at them. They're very attractive in Norwich yellow. This way, I've got these two-way radios that I can, when I take him down to go pee, I can radio back to them up in the man loft. And you and I can use them sometimes.
We should get them.
I know, we love it.
So if you ever find yourself in a white room,
yeah,
just get your Motorola radio out.
That's what I'd love to do in the white room. I'd like to. Do you know what I would actually do in the white room?
What?
The last podcast, Rog. Our last podcast.
This might be it and we'd never know.
It's very true. It might be whacked.
Can I just thank one GFOP, Peter Haley.
Go ahead.
Who sent me this. The Charlotte Hornets just returned.
Yeah.
And on that opening night, they gave every fan a tuxedo t-shirt. I'm very touched at this great moment of civic pride. You thought about us and you sent us this beautiful, look at it.
Yeah.
This is going to be what the Men in Blazers national team kind of thing playing when we get that team together.
Great looking shirt. Another way to connect to us, Rog, meninblazers.wickerspaces.com, a wonder of the modern world. You can always find us at meninblazers.com. Sign up for our newsletter there, The Raven, Rog. Follow us on Twitter, at Embassy Davies, at Rog Bennett, at Men in Blazers, Rog. It made that Sports Illustrated list, the Twitter 100. That was great.
Really?
Yeah, it's really good.
It's amazing.
Instagram, at Men in Blazers, Facebook. We love reading your comments, seeing your stuff on our Facebook page. We've got a subreddit, Rog, maintained by GFOP Akshay. That's at reddit.com/r/meninblazers. You can email us.
Lots of nude photos of us on that one.
at meninblazers@gmail.com. Send your ravens to the crap part of Soho. Vendorpunk, Rog.
War pig.
Who wants to sex Mutombo?
Exposure.
Courage.
Size the day.
Is that your analysis?
To tweed.
Abrigado. Rock on, mate.
Kung fu fight in America.
Love you, Rog.
Love you, Davo. And I kind of love Arlo Black, too.
Oh, so cute.
He's growing on me.